Our last case for this morning is Jawad against Holder, 1131-42. Ms. Cobb?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, my name is Erin Cobb. I represent the petitioner, Mr. Saladin Abdeljawad. The petitioner is here today seeking review of the actions of the immigration judge and the board in denying him certain statutory and regulatory rights.
It would help me if you could crystallize as carefully as you can what legal issue you think is before us.
Sure. The legal issue is the denial of his statutory right to present evidence at his hearing.
Evidence did he not present?
Well, he presented the evidence. The issue is that the judge ignored the evidence.
Right. See, that would drive a truck-sized hole into subsection D. If we could say that evidence was ignored even when it was presented and the immigration court discusses it and the immigration court doesn't give the weight to the evidence that the petitioner thinks it ought to have.
This court has already...
Any limiting principle here?
I'm sorry?
I said, can you suggest any limiting principle here for us?
Well, this court has already, in Banks versus Gonzalez, in that decision, the judge did address, in the context of the decision, the judge summarized the expert testimony. But then when he was actually analyzing the claim for relief, he ignored that and relied upon his own view of it. In that case, it was country conditions. Also in Boyanovsky versus Gonzalez, during that decision, these were both cited in the reply brief. In that decision, the judge purported to accept the affidavit of an expert, but then again, he discredited it because he had already decided, previous to actually issuing the decision, that the petitioner in that case was not credible. So in both...
I guess my problem here is if we're focusing on the daughter's testimony. One of the points that the board made, the government makes, is that she was simply not in a position, even if you credited every word of what she said, she was simply not in a position to provide information that would have helped on this question of the legitimacy of the marriage to Karen. And in that sense, I mean, we use harmless error rules in these cases, as we do in most circumstances. I find it difficult to see this case in the pattern of these other cases where there was significant expert testimony that the immigration judge never really incorporates, even just to say the reason I'm rejecting it is X, Y, or Z. Elam's testimony is just not that helpful.
I think I have 2 points on that, Your Honor. One is that the way the judge himself analyzed the claim, we know that he purported to consider it and that he considered it helpful to Karen. He did say Elham's testimony rarely conflicted directly with Mrs. Blankenship, and then said that the facts were consistent with the friendship, the facts that Elham testified to were consistent with the friendship that Ms. Blankenship had with the respondent and his family.
But so, she doesn't know where her father is when he isn't home. She's 10 years old or so, at 10, 11, whatever she was at the time. She really can't say anything about drinking or drugs. She's a child.
That's correct, but the judge didn't discredit all of her testimony. Instead, he pulled pieces from it and said that it was supportive of Karen, and that's where the problem lies. I think this would be a different case, and I probably wouldn't be up here arguing with you if the judge had just completely discredited the testimony based upon her age or upon her lack of knowledge of her father's whereabouts. I mean, yes, given, I understand that she's 11 years old at the time, but regardless, she testified consistent with what an 11-year-old would have observed, an 11-year-old would have seen.
And all he said was that just wasn't that probative. So well, even if he credited everything she said, I mean, so he picked and he chose certain things that were consistent with Karen's testimony. That's fine. But it didn't shed a lot of light on whether they were really living together, what was the nature of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
No, not really. Not when you look at what her testimony was.
Again, I'd go back
because she says they were fighting. She remembered them fighting and getting divorced.
The mother, yeah.
Yeah, that she remembers visiting Karen's apartment 4 times. Karen took her to Chuck E. Cheese and to an amusement park. And that Karen and Jawad seemed playful together and may have slept together while the kids watched the movie in the living room. I mean, to me, that doesn't advance the ball.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem is that it's so opposite of what Karen testified to, but then the judge said that it corresponded with and actually supported Karen's version. And then later on in his opinion, when the judge discredited Jawad's testimony, the primary reason he gave was his lack of corroboration. But here was corroboration, but the judge just discredited it. And credited it with Karen's side of the story. I think the four visits, the trips to Chuck E. Cheese and to Great America, the fact that she knew about the apartment, that a bird bit her one time when she was there, these all testify to more of a relationship that Karen said. Karen said that she saw him once, that she took him to Great America. It's over a few months, but Karen did say that she probably saw him once a month. At first she didn't qualify it at all, and then finally she said, well, maybe once a month. If they were together and are in this relationship, in the kind of a solid relationship for a few months before they testified the drinking turned things south, then this is a lot of visits within a few months, and significantly different than what Karen had said. Okay. Going back to other points on prejudice, again, the judge gave 3 reasons for discrediting Mr. Jawad's version of events. The first one was this lack of corroboration. The other two are insufficient to stand on their own. The second one was an incentive to lie, but frankly, any respondent testifying in removal proceedings, any defendant in a criminal proceeding would have some kind of incentive to minimize harmful testimony, bolster helpful testimony. The third reason was that drug and alcohol use by Karen did not explain discrepancies between the two testimony. This, though, is Karen's drug and alcohol use and not the petitioner's drug and alcohol use. I would like to take one moment to talk about the respondent's argument that the board, or that this was not raised and exhausted before the board. I think the board's own language indicates that it was, that the record does not. The board stated that the record does not support respondents' allegation on appeal that the judge ignored the evidence. I think this one statement is enough to show that they at least considered the issue raised. I don't think it's enough for this court's review. This court has repeatedly said that the board has to announce its decisions in terms sufficient to enable a reviewing court to perceive that it has heard and thought and not merely reacted. This was a one-sentence conclusory statement. That really just knocked down what he had to say. We don't know what the board thought about it. And so it's insufficient. I would, if the court doesn't have questions at this time, I'll reserve the remainder.
You can reserve the rest of your time. That's fine. Mr. Moss.
May it please the Court. My name is Benjamin Mark Moss, and I represent the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. Mr. Abdel-Jawad, after...
We're not thinking of asking you to have him file a personal letter in this case.
No, Your Honor. After a full and fair hearing, Mr. Abdel-Jawad was found to fail in his application for relief from removal in the form of cancellation of removal and adjustment of status, the board having concluded that he failed to sustain his burden of proving that he was entitled to a favorable exercise of discretion based on marriage fraud. And while that determination is not before the court today, it is fully supported by the record. And so the issue before the court today is actually quite narrow. Because of the discretionary denial, even the respondent concedes that the petitioner concedes that the court lacks jurisdiction to engage in reweighing of the facts that the board weighed, which narrows it down to potentially a legal question or a constitutional claim. And there are no constitutional claims here, so it's just...
I think that's conceded, and I was actually happy to see that the petitioner is focusing on the set of statutory and regulatory rights that the immigration acts confer.
Absolutely.
And it certainly can't be your position that those rights couldn't, in an appropriate case, give rise to a jurisdiction.
I agree, Your Honor. In an appropriate case, that could be litigated, but that isn't this case. As the Court and my colleague have discussed, this is really about the Board's weighing of evidence, not about whether it ignored it. The issue before the Court today is whether the petitioner has raised a good faith, a colorable allegation that the Board has ignored relevant evidence. And that claim cannot be sustained here. The Board considered and then discounted Elham's testimony for three reasons. The Court and counsel have already discussed these reasons, but just to highlight them, first is the fact that Elham testified about events that occurred in 1998 when she was 11 years old. She testified in 2010, so 12 years had already elapsed.
So I take it you would concede that if the Board, and I'll include the immigration judge, I'll say both of them.
If were,
the Board and the immigration judge had not said a single word, not a peep, about Elham's testimony, had just motored on ahead and made their decision, we might have a problem. That's obviously not what happened, but I just want to get some sense of where your position is.
In such a case, there might be a problem, although even then I would want to explore whether there was a harmless error, whether the evidence was in fact relevant. But just back in this case, the evidence was not relevant. It was not considered to be probative based on those three reasons. And so this is just a different, unfortunately, different case. To address briefly the exhaustion argument, while I'm sensitive to the fact that the government's position may appear to be somewhat technical, I did want to highlight to the Court today that those three the three discount factors, specifically the age at the time, the limited firsthand knowledge, and the incentive to support her father's testimony, those are the three bases for the Board's discounting. And Mr. Abdul-Jawad did not raise each of those bases before the Board.
But we go through this a lot. You know, at what micro level does the person have to do this? The general issue of Elham's testimony is before the Board.
The issue absolutely is, as a matter of fact, which is how the petitioner characterized it in his brief before the Board, it was only before this Court when the petitioner realized that the Court has no jurisdiction to engage in weighing of facts that he characterized it as a legal claim. But the record shows that the Board considered it and considered the evidence and then discounted it. So the Court really doesn't have an issue before it this live. And if the Court doesn't have any further questions, we respectfully request that the Court dismiss the petition for lack of jurisdiction or alternatively deny it.
Apparently no further questions, so thank you very much. Ms. Cobb, you may add what you wish within the time remaining.
To start with the respondent's last point, as far as the classification in the appellate brief before the Board, that it was a factual issue, this Court has never been bound by what an appellant calls an issue. You know, before people call it legal issues, this Court determines it's factual. They say it's factual. It may be legal. I don't think that's the determinative here. To go back to as far as how far Elham's testimony, I think, Judge Williams, that was your question, as far as how far Elham's testimony would actually take the petitioner, even if the judge credited everything, I think this Court has to analyze it in the framework that the judge decided it within. It can't, as a reviewing court, go back and look at all the testimony again and reweigh all of the evidence. Its job is to look and see what the court actually did and whether or not Elham's testimony, properly considered and properly weighed, not ignored, would have affected his decision. Again, because one of his main reasons was that lack of corroboration, really the primary reason, the only one I think that would stand on its own, and here we have corroborating evidence that he did not consider, that in itself is prejudice and a reason to remand. The court did not deny the application for any other reason, such as hardship to the kids or criminal offenses or anything like that, that would take it out of the court's consideration or make it harmless error. So we do ask that the court would remand. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The court will take the case under advisement and will be in recess until tomorrow morning.